The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I just signed into law the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, making lynching a federal hate crime for the first time in American history.
So today we are gathered to do unfinished business, to acknowledge the horror in this part of our history, to state unequivocally that lynching is and has always been a hate crime, and to make clear that the federal government may now prosecute these crimes as such. Lynching is not a relic of the past. Racial acts of terror still occur in our nation. And when they do, we must all have the courage to name them and hold the perpetrators to account.
Finally, we're going after the lynchers. I think there's three or four that live right down the street from me. This is what they're preoccupied with. I think it was Dinesh D'Souza yesterday, conservative commentator. He said this is like passing a law against witch burning or cannibalism. All our cities. There's crime infested cities all across the United States. Violence, looting, burning, killing, murder. And this is what the illegitimate administration that currently occupies the White House is concerned with. Lynching, something that hasn't happened in decades here in the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show at CRN Digital Talk Radio Channel 3 on that platform. They also have some replays through the day. But to get to the live video stream, you've got to go to our very own website. That's thetrumpet.com. You know all about it if you're a regular viewer. thetrumpet.com/live takes you to the live stream page. And also you can get to the podcasts that are posted after the fact if you listen on demand. Of course, at the front page of our website over at the right-hand side, there's also a box there for the Trumpet Daily. So there's plenty of ways that you can get to this show. You can download the audio through iTunes and other smart devices or features such as that as well. So multiple ways to get to the Trumpet Daily. Scott Adams, he pretty much summed up some of the thoughts I've had in recent months about the Democrats, the radical left, the communists in government going after crimes that aren't even there. He tweeted out, "I've noticed Democrats are only tough on crimes that aren't happening. They're tough on crime. Lynching! This is not a relic of the past," says the fake vice president. I mean, this is happening all over the place. Don't you know about it? White supremacy and the like? It's everywhere. And finally, it's a federal hate crime. Because it's just it's ubiquitous as a stop sign. They're all over the place, these lynchers. But now, finally, they can go after them. They can crack down. "I've noticed Democrats are only tough on crimes that aren't happening. Meanwhile, crimes that are happening, slap on the wrist." Just like the woman that was the nominee for the Supreme Court. I guess she might make it on through now that Susan Collins is all for it. She's a Republican in name only. But she's had a private meeting with Jackson, and she now sees that, hey, she's going to be a great Supreme Court justice. Here she was just giving a slap on the wrist to all of these pedophiles, to trafficking child pornography, children on video, if you can believe it, being abused sexually, and that sort of thing, just being trafficked by these perps and that justice. Jackson, who's now on her way to the Supreme Court, evidently. Yeah, it's not a real big deal. We'll just give you a few months. Or if the mandatory sentence is 5 to 10 years, we'll make sure it's 5 years. The lowest possible, the lightest possible sentence. And meanwhile, here's the federal hate crime for all of the lynchers all across the United States of America. Meanwhile, look at what's happening at our southern border. This was Bill Malugin's report on Fox News just yesterday, clip 4.
The Border Patrol facilities are now way over capacity, and the federal government has started mass releasing migrants into communities to help ease some of that pressure. Take a look at this drone video shot yesterday right here in Eagle Pass, Texas. What you're looking at are dozens of illegal immigrants just coming across the Rio Grande and entering into Eagle Pass illegally. Some of them just wading across the river, others using a boat or a raft. But this is the sort of thing that happens multiple times a day, day in and day out here in Eagle Pass as bigger groups are starting to be encountered. Speaking of which, take a look at this photo right here. This was a massive single group that was encountered by border agents on Sunday. It was a group of 187 migrants, all from Nicaragua or Cuba. And Border Patrol reports they've been encountering these massive single groups every single day out here, essentially, in the Eagle Pass area. And that's putting some serious strain on their resources and their holding capacity. And because of that, the federal government now mass releasing migrants.
Mass releasing migrants all across the United States. Hundreds of them. The detention facilities, they're full up. And so they're just releasing these illegal aliens by the hundreds to roam across the United States of America. No problem there, unless they lynch somebody, I guess. But outside of that, they're free. They're Americans now, or very nearly. That goes on daily. And we know all about the statistics from just the past 14 months. Joe Biden and his handlers opening the doors wide open, wide open. Letting them come in from Nicaragua, from Honduras, from Cuba, from Mexico, all across South America, Central America, even from nations overseas. They're working their way to Central America so they can just come right in. The doors are wide open. But at least, finally, we've got a lynching law in place that makes it a federal hate crime. It just makes you think of that verse in Isaiah 5 and verse 20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil. Woe unto them that put darkness for light and light for darkness. I've noticed that these communists, as one commentator on Twitter pointed out, they are really tough on crimes that aren't happening. And crimes that are happening, well, they go easy on those. Certainly when it suits their political aims. Wide open borders, those are future Democrat voters. So just let them come right on in. If the detention facilities get full, then we'll have mass releases and just let them go. Luke 11 and verse 35, it says, "Take heed, therefore, that the light which is in you be not darkness." Take heed, God says. Take heed that the light in you be not darkness. Don't let it turn to darkness. That's what's happening to our nations today. They call evil good and good evil. There's more stories from yesterday about the Biden DOJ ramping up its prosecution of January 6 protesters. They're looking, I think the DOJ is looking to hire something like an additional 130 attorneys. They want $30, $40 million in funding so that they can get all of these attorneys to prosecute all of these people that protested on January 6th, 14, 15 months ago. You know about the 80 or so people that are still in jail awaiting their trial for what? Trespassing? For what? Vandalism? Not that that's okay. But I think they've served their penalty. I think they've paid their time. There was, as someone commented earlier this week, there was more violence at the Oscar ceremony on Sunday night than there was on January 6th from Trump supporters. Now, there was law enforcement firing those smash grenades into the crowds. There was the policeman that shot Ashley Babbitt in the neck. But as far as Trump supporters actually carrying out violent acts, did any of them go up and just slap a police officer? Maybe they did. I don't know. And if they did, they should be punished. Quite unlike the Hollywood celebrity that gets away with it because, well, he's a celebrity. He's to be protected. But grandma who took the selfie, we've got to get some more attorneys and make sure that we can get those grandmothers in jail. And no plea bargain, no offer for bail, nothing like that. Just let them sit there. The process is the punishment. I mean, to sit in jail for something like trespassing for 14 months after all that we saw in the summer of 2020. You know, I got into it yesterday in doctrines class, or maybe it was marriage and family, about just the importance of precedent and how that it used to be that courtrooms and judges used to really try to look back in our history and make sure that, you know, if there was an established case that happened 20, 40, 60 years ago, that there's some consistency there, but not so anymore. I mean, you've got these activist judges, you've got these law enforcement officials, you've got all of these government agencies that have become completely politicized, and this two-tiered standard of justice in the United States. America is under attack. Look at what dominates the narratives. Jesse Waters had this, I think I have the clip later, we'll get to it, but he basically just went through the percentages last night on his program where he said, you know, Americans think there's this many African Americans in the United States or this many Hispanics, or they think that there's this many homosexuals or this many transgenders. And in every case, the percentage that thought this is how many we have, it was just a tiny sliver of what Americans typically think. Shows you the power of the propagandists in the media. Here's that clip from Jesse Waters, clip 5.
How many transgender people do you think live in the United States? The people who took this poll estimated 21% of our nation's population is transgender. 21%. A quarter of the country is trans. That's what people think. Now, are these news stories starting to make sense? In reality, the number is 1%. 1% is trans. How about gay people? We spend a lot of time talking about sexual orientation. With all that attention, surely that number must be high. Well, Americans estimated that 30% of their fellow citizens are gay. Wrong again. The real number is 3%. Now, is this starting to add up? The Democrats don't want you to know the real numbers because it would tank their entire agenda. They want you to see victims around every corner and elect more Democrats to right the ship.
Agenda, you see. It's all the agenda. How do you, with this survey, how do you assume it's 21% and in actual fact it's 1%? You listen to some of these media reports and you would think that this nation is just, you know, pretty much half homosexual and transgender. To be sure, those are movements that are gaining adherents, supporters. Certainly lots of support, but people that actually indulge in that sort of lifestyle as well. For sure, it's Sodom and Gomorrah, like Isaiah 3 says, just as Jesus prophesied in Luke 17. Ron DeSantis in Florida, he just recently led the charge on a bill that would, and it was, I mean, had the support of the people in Florida, that basically said, if you're a teacher in kindergarten up through third grade, You can't teach these little children about sexuality. You can't get on your soapbox if you're a homosexual or a transgender and preach to six-year-olds. That's all. And as he brought out on the news yesterday, there's nothing in the legislation that even mentions the word gay, and yet you listen to Hollywood, you listen to the popular culture, and it's as if he's outlawed homosexuality. That's the way they spin it. So it has popular support, and the uproar among the elites, among the Hollywood activists, even in his state, DeSantis' state, Walt Disney, they had all these executives come out yesterday. This was just towards the tail end of yesterday. And listen to them as they explain some of the changes that are coming to their theme parks, Disney World and the like. I mean, that's obviously a huge, it's a huge tourist pull in Florida. But these people, I mean, what would Walt Disney think of the current leaders heading up Disney World, heading up these theme parks? Listen to this montage, these woke Disney executives, clip 8.
I'm here as a mother of two queer children, actually, one transgender child. You know, we only have a handful of queer leads in our content. And I went, what? That can't be true. And I realized, oh, it actually is true. We have many, many, many LGBTQIA characters in our stories. And yet we don't have enough leads.
Especially with like trans characters, you can't see if someone is trans. There's not one way to look trans. And so kind of the only way to have these like canonical trans characters, canonical asexual characters, canonical bisexual characters is to give them stories where they can like be their whole selves.
Our leadership over there has been so welcoming to like my like not at all secret gay agenda. And so like I feel a sense of I don't have to be afraid to like, let's have these two characters kiss. Let's in the background, this like I was just wherever I could, just basically adding queerness to like, the, if you see anything queer in the show, I'm proud of them. But like, I just was like, no one would stop me.
We removed all of the gendered greetings in relationship to our life skills. So we no longer say ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
We're also reacting from the reality that when they can erase you, when they can criminalize your existence, when they can demonize who you are, the next step is to criminalize you and take your kids.
There's Walt Disney 2022. They can't say ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls anymore. We've got to be gender neutral. There's woke Disney, not Walt Disney. It's now woke Disney. That's right. That's right. You had the executive there at the top of the montage. She's the mother of two queer children. She's heading up the Disney World theme park. All those theme parks there at Disney World. In the Trumpet magazine, this is from 2017, we said, the same God who created man and a woman has stated clearly that homosexuality, lesbianism, transgenderism, and even cross-dressing are wrong. And then it gives all these scriptures, Old Testament and New. It's in the Bible. We've got to tell you what the Bible says about these things. The Apostle Peter warned that those who commit such sins, unless they repent, will face severe punishment. If you're not subscribing to the Trumpet magazine, you can see why you need it. Call our operators, 1-866-930-3024. There's no cost, no obligation. It's a toll-free number if you're here in the U.S. or Canada or the Caribbean. Tomorrow's news today, you're beginning to hear that more with Steve Bannon and some of these other commentators, by the way. Tomorrow's news today, you heard it here first, though. We've had that tagline for decades. That quote I gave to you is from 2017. Some of the scriptures you can look at later. Look at Leviticus 20 and verse 13. I'll just let you read them on your own time. Leviticus 20, 13. Deuteronomy 22 and verse 5. And then read Romans 1, verses 26 and 27. It's a world, it's a nation, nations of Israel, just drenched in sin. And then, like Isaiah 3 says, I mean, the show of our countenance tells you all that you need to know. We're proud of it. They're proud of it at Disney. It doesn't even come to the bottom line anymore. Not that that's the righteous way either, just to make a buck. But think about all of these customers, these families with little children, with little boys, little girls, that are not even going to want to take their children to Disney World like we took ours 15 years ago. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, can't say it. They're not going to do it. You got to be gender neutral. What was that one term he used? The canonical transgender characters? So there's going to be entire stories now coming out from Disney about canonical transgenders? That's right. We got to keep up with the times. We got to satisfy the less than 1% of the population. And the rest are just supposed to play along, I guess. The Wall Street Journal, they had a story about Hunter Biden's laptop, saying that these prosecutors appear to be preparing themselves for trial. The Journal says a federal tax investigation into Hunter Biden is gaining momentum as prosecutors gather information from several of its associates about the sources of his foreign income, including from Ukraine, and examine President Biden's son's relationship with a company that handled some of his finances, according to people familiar with the matter. I just watched a clip from CNN before we went to air here. It's laughable watching, in all seriousness, Hunter was working for Burisma and making $50,000 per month. This is all something we reported 18 months ago. And to hear CNN to take on such a serious and sober tone, this is CNN, just to report the facts. They wouldn't even be out with this were it not for the New York Times 2 weeks ago saying, yeah, the laptop's real. Paragraph 17, remember? The laptop's real. It has been authenticated. And now they come out. But now, they're really walking the fine line because they want to throw Hunter under the bus because it's obvious, right? But then they also want to protect Joe Biden. So here's where we are now in the news cycle. Hunter is a sellout. He was trying to make money off of his father's name. His father was vice president at the time. Barack Obama knew all about it. But the Hunter laptop applies to Hunter only, you see. No one else, certainly not Joe Biden. No. Just Hunter Biden. So if he goes to jail, or if he's on his way to jail and then he gets pardoned from Joe Biden, there you go. Everything's been settled. This is from the Daily Mail. They had a piece. Well, let me just back up. These two Republican senators, Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley, I think it is, of Iowa, they revealed yesterday these receipts showing that Hunter received payments from foreign oligarchs that further reveal, quote, the extent to which President Biden might be and almost certainly is compromised. They're taking money in from Ukraine. No wonder the Bidens are so interested in Ukraine. Helping Ukraine, training Ukrainian soldiers in Poland or perhaps in Ukraine. We don't quite know from what the fake president has said because he contradicts himself. And what he says or announces has to be dialed back. No wonder. Ukraine, he gets all the money from the spouse of the former mayor of Moscow, Russia. And then according to these latest revelations, Chinese oligarchs says, according to the documents obtained by the senators, energy company CEFC, an arm of the Chinese government, paid Wells Fargo Clearing Services $100,000 and designated further credit to Owasco, Hunter's firm. What was it? This arm of the Chinese government sending money, tens of thousands of dollars, to Hunter Biden's firm. Hunter's in trouble. But there should be a whole lot more. This is like the Clinton Foundation, Joe Biden style. Joe Biden remembers the big guy. Joe Biden, remember, gets the 10%. Joe Biden, remember, he's the kingpin. I mean, it's his name that they're getting rich from. They're getting wealthy off of his name. Jim Biden, Hunter Biden, I forget the name of the daughter, but they're all, a lot of them are on these boards of these companies that are getting rich off of the Biden family name. Here's another one. This is from the Daily Mail. They exposed this A few days ago, Hunter Biden did help secure millions in funding for a U.S. contractor in Ukraine specializing in deadly pathogen research. So these biolabs in Ukraine, deadly pathogen research. Does this sound familiar? This is the Ukrainian version of Wuhan, the Wuhan lab. And Hunter Biden with financial connections to these labs? The Daily Mail says here, emails from Hunter's abandoned laptop show he helped secure millions of dollars of funding for Medibiota, a Department of Defense contractor specializing in research on pandemic-causing diseases that could be used as bioweapons. So these labs that could use these things as bioweapons, it's funded. It's funded by the Department of Defense in the United States of America. Medibiota, remember the name. We'll probably be getting into it more as we proceed. So Medibiota, this is this Ukrainian medical data company. Hunter wanted to invest in this company in case it went big. We know about his connections to Burisma. He's on the board. He's getting $50,000 or $60,000 a month from them. And then the investment firm Rosemont Seneca, another one of Hunter's firms. And how that, yeah, they were expecting this Medibiota to go big. So they got to get investment in it. And the way that it operates is then once they invest in it, then they go to the big guy. And the big guy passes or is sponsoring favorable legislation or whatever it is that helps those companies. All of this dirty cash, compromised communists in government, sellouts, traitors. It says here from the Daily Mail, Medibiota has worked in Ukraine for Black and Veatch, a U.S. defense contractor with deep ties to military intelligence agencies, which built secure labs in Ukraine that analyzed killer diseases and bioweapons. It says Hunter and his colleagues at his investment firm, Rosemont Seneca, routinely raised millions of dollars for technology companies, hoping the firms would take off and make them all fortunes. Medibiota was one of these firms. Emails between Hunter and his colleagues excitedly discuss how the company's monitoring of medical data could become an essential tool for government and companies looking to spot outbreaks of infectious diseases. The president's son and his colleagues invested $500,000 in Medibiota through their firm Rosemont Seneca. $500,000 trying to make a quick buck, trying to get rich quick. Daily Mail says here, government spending records show the Department of Defense awarded an $18.4 million contract to Medibiota between February 2014 and November 2016. That's at the tail end of the Obama administration. Hello, anyone in the DOJ listening? Anyone in the FBI concerned about this? Hunter's company invests in it, and then, surprise, surprise, the Department of Defense awards Medibiota an $18 million contract. So Medibiota makes a ton of money on your dime. You're the taxpayer in the U.S. The Department of Defense says, here's $18 million. We'll give you a deal. And then Hunter pockets the cash. Well, his investment, what a return on his investment. How could he have known that Medibiota would just take off? It says here, the U.S. Defense Threat Reduction Agency also commissioned BNV to build a biological safety laboratory in Odessa, Ukraine in 2010. Further on, it says BNV was awarded a further five-year, $85 million contract in 2012. In another sign of the deep ties between Medibiota and the Department of Defense, Hunter's RSTP business partner, Rob Walker, said he would have a friend reach out to DND on the down low. That's in the emails. The New York Times has often authenticated it. He'd get in contact with the DOD. He'd keep it on the down low in order to prove the company's bona fides to top prospective investors Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley in October 2014. Wow. And then to hear CNN today. Yes, we've learned that Hunter Biden worked for this company called Burisma. And he was getting a lot of money every single month. Listen, though, listen to CNN try to provide, even still, listen to them try to provide cover for the big guy. Joe Biden. Clip six.
There is zero evidence that Vice President Biden or President Biden has done anything wrong in connection with what Hunter Biden's done.
Joe Biden's the big guy. That's on the laptop, too. Joe Biden gets the 10% cut, even when he's serving as vice president under Obama. And there's the CNN reporter. They admit, they finally have admitted that, yes, Hunter was trading on his father's name in order to make a lot of money, but there's no evidence. Sound familiar? There's no evidence that Vice President Biden or President Biden has done anything wrong. No, there's no evidence. That's exactly what they said 18 months ago about the laptop itself. It's not evidence of anything. It's Russian disinformation. Listen to this, this exchange yesterday. This is the FBI cyber chief. He's in Washington giving testimony. And Representative Matt Gaetz has this exchange with him. Clip two.
You are the assistant director of FBI cyber. I want to know where Hunter Biden's laptop is. Where is it?
Sir, I don't know that answer.
That is astonishing to me. Has FBI cyber assessed whether or not Hunter Biden's laptop could be a point of vulnerability, allowing America's enemies to hurt our country? You've talked about passwords here. I mean, Hunter Biden's password on his laptop was Hunter02. He drops it off at a repair store. I'm holding the receipt from Max Computer Repair, where in December 2019, they turned over this laptop to the FBI. And what now you're telling me right here is that as the assistant director of FBI cyber, you don't know where this is after it was turned over to you 3 years ago.
Yes, sir. That's an accurate statement.
Yeah, the FBI, this guy anyway. What is he? The assistant director of FBI cyber has no idea where the Hunter laptop is. It's all over the world. Who knows how many of America's enemies have a copy of that hard drive? Matt Gaetz has one right here in the hearing. He wanted to put it into the congressional record. The FBI guy, however, they got it in 2019, remember? He doesn't know where it is. Now, they do know that they need 130 attorneys to help with the January 6th prosecutions. They do know that they need $30 to $40 more million so that they can go after grandma with the selfie. But Hunter with the laptop and the big guy getting 10% and the sellout to the CCP and Russia and Ukraine, not so much of a big deal. Well, if you're the communists in the media, we will grant you the fact that the laptop is real. Okay, it's been authenticated, but just so you know, there's no evidence of any wrongdoing for Joe Biden. He's not connected to this at all. You know, there was another story yesterday about the Bo Biden. He's the late son of Joe Biden, the Bo Biden Foundation for the Protection of Children. This is a story from the New York Post, which says that it pulled in $3.9 million in 2020. Just a couple years ago, during all the lockdown mania, $3.9 million for this foundation, the Bo Biden Foundation for the Protection of Children. How much of that went to actually protect children? $500,000. Like 1/8. Of the total income of this foundation, it actually went to helping children. Where did the rest go? Well, all these big six-figure salaries. I mean, you got to pay the staff. And did they ever pay them? $150,000, $170,000, $180,000? What a scam. Are these people, are they really going to Washington to serve the people? Are they servants of the people? Or are they serving themselves? You know the answer to that question. This is a sickness times many over. The New York Post says here, the donors included, well, it just talks about some of the big time donors that contributed to this foundation. As I say, it's not unlike the Clinton Foundation. Tens of millions of dollars of cash. They're lining their pockets. Selling themselves out to America's enemies, compromised in every respect. These are the consequences of a stolen election? What about all those commentators that said, you know what, it happened. We're not going to look at the piles of evidence, all the affidavits, all the video footage showing the cheating. We're just going to move on. We'll think about the next election. All right, well, that's what has happened. And look at the southern border. And look at this crime family. Look at what they're getting away with. Speaking of stolen elections, Real Clear Politics, by a margin of 52% to 40%, voters believe that cheating affected the outcome of the 2020 U.S. presidential election. 52%. You'd never know this listening to CNN, because on that point, they're still in denial, or in cover-up mode, to be more precise. There's no evidence. There's no evidence Joe Biden's connected to the laptop. None at all. No evidence of any cheating in the 2020 election. 52% of Americans, that would be a majority, say that, yeah, it was determined by cheating. It says this stands in stark contrast to the countless news stories editorializing about no evidence of voter fraud and the myth of voter fraud. It isn't just Republicans who believe this cheating occurred. Even 34% of Democrats believe it, as do 38% of those who somewhat support President Biden. They know. They know they pulled off the steal. And yet not held accountable. Frank Meehl, I think he's also at Real Clear. What history teaches us about stolen elections. They're going on and on about Donald Trump and what he did or said to Vice President Pence, that you need to hold this off until we can examine the evidence, as if that's a crime. They're looking at phone logs from January 6th. All of that's meant to cover up the whole point of January 6th in the first place, to look at the election in those swing states. To look at the evidence of voter fraud. NBC headline, Trump probably broke the law in an effort to obstruct January 6th proceedings, judge says. A judge just decided to make his opinion known. Well, is there a trial? Is it being presented before a jury? Are they examining evidence? Some judge gets up and says Trump might have broken the law. I wonder what his political persuasion is. I wonder who appointed that particular judge. A judge to get... Where are the higher-ups coming out and censuring someone like that or impeaching someone like that? You're just a judge. You're to preside over cases. Now we got to listen to every judge's opinion. And of course, it's perfect, isn't it? The propagandists in the media, they see that. Ooh, judge. A judge said it. Headline news, Trump might have broken the law. Trump might have broken the law. That's the headline, and it's probably above the fold in most of the major papers, because that's all you need to know. He might have broken the law. Meehl writes this. It says, if the election of 2020 did nothing else, it established once and for all that the nation has no clear mechanism to address allegations of fraud in a presidential election. Trump's lawyers, rightly or wrongly, sought to find such a mechanism in the 1887 law. Pence and the Democrats in Congress, as well as many Republicans, declared that the president was mistaken. He had no helper. The affliction was bitter, bitter affliction, and no help for the president. It says, but Democrats weakened their argument that Trump had no grounds for his challenge when they seek to revise the Electoral Count Act to prevent such challenges as they're doing now. They pulled off the steal a year and a half ago, and now they want to just button everything up to make sure that you can't challenge anything about any election in the future, because they know how easy it is to steal it. Meehl says if Vice President Pence had chosen to follow the plan set out by Trump's lawyers, he would have been engaged in an act of insurrection. He would not have been engaged in an act of insurrection, but rather an act of interpretation, and his decisions would have been subject to oversight by the Congress itself as well as the courts. In other words, it could have played out, even if there were certain things in the Constitution that were not said, that did not address this specific thing. I mean, I just got into this in Doctrines this morning, the spirit of the law. I was talking, of course, about the Ten Commandments, God's law, and how that, as Mr. Armstrong wrote back in the 1980s, you know, God's law, if the Bible had an explanation for every human action or every single violation of God's law, I mean, it'd be a jillion pages. As it is, I mean, it's a pretty good sized book, but you've got enough in here, as Mr. Armstrong said in that article, to cover everything. Truly, you do. If you understand the spirit of God's law and how that God's law is love, the principle of God's law is outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others. And God, he spells it out. There's the two great commands, love toward God, love toward your neighbor. But then God spells it out into 10 commands, the 10 commandments. Because he knows that human nature doesn't understand this nature of God, the love of God. And so God has to spell it out in greater detail. But he didn't go on and just spell it out into millions and millions and millions of pages of legislation. Thankfully, he didn't. I mean, we can pore over the book of the Bible and understand the truth about God's law of love and use that understanding as able ministers of the Spirit, as it says in 2 Corinthians 3:6, and actually apply the truth or the laws of God in every case. That's all that it would have taken. I know this is a lot to ask in our very legalist, is it in black and white? If it's not in the Constitution, there's all the debate. His interpretation is this. Her interpretation over here is this. But what about the Spirit? And what about pure and simple? What about cheating? Just cheating. Supposing the Constitution doesn't spell out, if you find this in Pennsylvania, you know, hours after the election day is over, in the dark of night, if the Constitution doesn't spell that out, well, how do you address it? You just use the spirit of the law. Was there rampant cheating, and are we going to allow it? In the end, what they did was they allowed it. They allowed it. There was another story here. This is the Washington Times from yesterday. The headline, Biden got 255,000 excess votes in fraud-tainted swing states in 2020. According to a study, fraud-tainted swing states. So now we know. I don't know what the Washington Times was saying back in, you know, November and December of 2020. But so many of the Republicans, so many of the conservative outlets, they said, hey, we dropped the ball. We should have just had more lawyers. We should have been like the Democrats and got 130 more lawyers before the election. Because they were able to orchestrate the steal. And now we're just going to shut up because we want to keep our show on Fox News. We don't want to get booted off of Fox News. So we're just going to not say anything about the election steal. The Washington Times says here, President Biden received hundreds of thousands of excess votes in Democratic-controlled areas in the 2020 election, according to an academic study on voter fraud that suggests the push to relax voting standards created new opportunities for electoral mischief. Right? They used COVID as the pretext. They relaxed voting standards. And that's how they created all of those fake ballots, those fraudulent ballots. It says here, John Lott Jr., the man behind the research, teased out those numbers by comparing Democratic-dominant areas to Republican-dominant places over the past two presidential elections, particularly in places where claims of election fraud were reported in 2020. Looking at six swing states, the data he crunched found that voter turnout in Republican areas increased from 2016 to 2020, while voter turnout among Democrats dropped. Wow. It's exactly what Trump has said for the past year and a half. I won, and I won big. I did a whole lot better than I did even in 2016. And the surveys, the numbers bear that out. The Republican turnout was on the up and up. It was higher than it was before. Democrats, no enthusiasm. How could they be enthusiastic for the basement candidate, really? It says here, Republican areas increased from 2016 to 20 while voter turnout among Democrats dropped, except, listen to this, except in places where voter fraud was claimed. They had all the excess turnout or the increased turnout just in those swing states. Every other state, the interest, the eagerness, the energy among Democrat voters, it was just low. It was plummeting. It was plummeting. They just couldn't get excited about the basement candidate, but they sure could in Fulton County, Georgia. And oh yes, in Arizona, right around Phoenix, there they were really excited about Joe Biden. Same with those key counties in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. What a fraud, through and through. And still you have a lot of people who lack the courage to point out the obvious. It says here this accounted for 255,000 excess votes for Mr. Biden above what he would have expected. I mean, that's a lot of excess votes, bogus ballots, fraudulent ballots. But just so that you know, Donald Trump might have broken the law on January 6th to even contest any of this. He might have. Listen to Donald Trump, speaking of the former president. He was, I think it was in Georgia over the weekend. This is from Saturday night, clip 7.
The evidence of cheating and fraud in the election was monumental. Kemp and Raffensperger sat by and did nothing. Here's just some of what those atrocious rhinos let corrupt Democrats get away with. Up to 35,000 votes were illegally cast in Georgia from individuals who voted in a different county from where they live. You're not allowed to do that. Nearly 44,000 ballots from Zuckerberg-funded drop boxes were counted in DeKalb County alone, despite violating the chain of custody rules. Illegal. In Fulton County, poll workers were caught scanning ballots multiple times on camera. The hand recount in Fulton County produced criminally falsified tally sheets, including some. Listen to this one. 100 votes for Biden, none for Trump. 200 votes for Biden, none. They wouldn't even give me a vote, not one. And yet we come out and we have rallies like this. We have tens of thousands of people. And he came out and he couldn't fill up the 8 circles, right? 4,000 ballots were listed as being impossibly scanned at the exact time. They were scanned at the exact same time. And it doesn't work that way. You can't do that. The machines don't work that way. All 374,000 in-person ballot images in Fulton County are, unfortunately, they're missing. A contractor hired by Raffensperger in Fulton County reported at least 2,800 ballots that came in mail carts instead of in black ballot bins, and 1,200 ballots that were wheeled in through a back door after several days after the election. And finally, over 100,000 obsolete and outdated voter registrations were purged from the rolls after the election, not before, including 18,486 people who happened to be dead.
There's the former president on Saturday evening, just running through all the evidence. There's so much of it out there. It's really Hunter Biden's laptop. It's a perfect symbol of all that's wrong with the propagandists in the media, with the rhinos in the Republican Party, all the Democrats, the communists in the Democrat Party. You've got this hard drive that's just loaded with evidence of wrongdoing, of evil, of treason, and so many of the talking heads just pretending that it doesn't exist. Or if it does, well, it's just in this really narrow scope. It might put Hunter in jail. It means that maybe Hunter's in trouble, but certainly no one else. No one else that worked for Rosemont Seneca. No one else that Hunter Biden had dealings with. It certainly doesn't apply to the big guy. Evidence all around. like Mr. Armstrong said about the paradox of today, the advance in technology, and yet all of this evil, so much knowledge and so much evil and filth to go with it. It's like being in an ocean of water, and not a drop of it is good to drink. I mean, there's an ocean of evidence all around us, and yet people won't look into it. They won't even consider it. Well, there's a few more reports, like I said, from the Washington Times, from Real Clear, some of these surveys, and so on and so forth. But still, here we are, 14 months in, and look at the damage that has been done. It's not like the country was perfect before Joe Biden came along, but it certainly has caused, the Joe Obama people have certainly caused so much damage to the United States in just such a short period of time. A couple of emails, I have to read this from my computer. This one from Texas, it says, thanks to everyone for filling in for Stephen Fleury. Everyone has done an outstanding job with vital information. We enjoy and appreciate each and every program. And the good news of the archaeology dig in Jerusalem, an interview with Brent Noctegal, was very exciting to hear of the upcoming summer program for the dig. We're still trying to finalize the arrangements, the deal for an apartment complex over there that would give us some living arrangements and also space for a library and a small institute as well. So we'll keep you posted on that. Hopefully there will be some exciting developments in that regard in just a few weeks' time, or perhaps a couple months. It says here, I'm a 90-year-old member of the PCG living in Connecticut. I'm eager to watch the TD every day and miss it on the weekends. I had a stroke in 2018 and have a hard time with word finding. It says, consequently, prayer and taking notes on sermons, etc., is a challenge, but I keep trying. However, I spend most of my days reading, studying, and viewing the websites with little difficulty, so I am very blessed. It says, my granddaughter helps me with sending along this type of feedback. First, I want to say how amazed I am all the time at God's work in this program. I'm so excited at what is accomplished, and each time I think about writing in for Stephen Fleury or a substitute, I'm then floored by the next day's performance or the next substitute. It says, God is clearly the star of the show, but I am so impressed with each of you and thankful for your hard work. Thanks to all that you do in the work, PCG, Mr. Gerald Fleury, and all the rest of the team. I'm also excited about the updates on Jerusalem. Keep up the great work. So that comes from a 90-year-old viewer from Connecticut. This one from Canada, lots of good news in today's program. That was wonderful. I don't think anyone can underestimate the importance of biblical archaeology and the message of biblical archaeology. It says, always enjoy Sam's programs. Love the interpretive reading of my email. Excellent emphasis on the word turbo. If that were an audition, he just got the part. So this is from a couple weeks ago, some responses that came in from all those subs we had when we had our trip. This one from India, the episode on March 9 was a gentle reminder for many and a shocker for a few that the world is turbocharged towards the Great Tribulation. This in response to Richard's program, his subbing in that particular week. It says, but it was a reality check for all of us. How much are we spiritually prepared for facing the most catastrophic period in human history? Attack on Ukraine is a trailer and foreshadowing of the events so plainly described by Jesus Christ himself in Matthew 24. It says, the episode was very well built around the end time prophecies, which should turbocharge each of us to repent, change ourselves from lawlessness to obedience towards God. If you'd like to email the show, you can submit some feedback to td@thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. We'll see you tomorrow.